Well, you know, it's amazing how many different kinds of beginnings there are. And in a way, there are as many different kinds of beginnings as there are ways of relating to people. You know, some pieces walk right in the door and announce completely who they are in 1 second. Think of that incredible beginning to Rhapsody in Blue, as that clarinet slides up its glissando to the first note. Within the first 3 seconds, you know there's Gershwin, there's America, there's jazz, there's concert music, and I own it all.
That is such an amazing beginning. And when it's well played, it puts you right in the middle of that piece in 15 seconds.
Right. It says who you are. You know, and there's lots of other pieces that do that. It's not only Gershwin and jazz. Think of that incredible beginning to Don Juan. In 1 second, you not only know Don Juan, you know Strauss, virtuoso orchestra. Listen to the incredible energy of the beginning to Don Juan.
That just sends a tingle right up my spine hearing that. It puts you right in the middle of that world. You know who Don Juan is, and you're right in the middle of it again in the first few seconds.
But contrary to what marketing executives might have you believe, it doesn't have to be loud to grab your attention. You know, think of the beautiful, exquisite beginning to Copland's Appalachian Spring. Though it's quiet and restrained, that slow-moving confidence, no accidentals for 3 minutes, that beautiful, placid beginning, chords unfolding at this slow, beautiful pace, actually just as completely introduces you to the world of Appalachian Spring in its own quiet way as Don Juan and Rhapsody in Blue do to theirs.
It's just a few simple notes, and you hear the sun rising, and it's gorgeous. You're right there. I'm also put in mind of the opening of also Sprach's Zarathustra, which begins with one note that you can't even really hear. You just feel that first note.
It is truly a gift the way that music can somehow, in the tiniest second, create a complete emotional universe like also Sprach's Zarathustra.
Well, those are all pieces that immediately pull you into their world. But there are pieces that are kind of deceptive with their beginnings, that set you up and then take an immediate left turn.
Yeah, and in fact, you know, sometimes when the genre is most established and clearest, it allows for the most play of ambiguity. You know, take a piece like Beethoven's Sonata, Opus 109. When it first starts, it sounds like one of the most beautiful, serene, elegant little beginnings. Couldn't be more lovely. Yet 1 second later, and how those two worlds will relate, in fact, turns out to be the point of the piece. So yes, there are pieces that are deceptive. And in fact, when the genre is really clear, even the simplest thing, a Haydn piece that begins like this, can be so witty because now it's an ending that has become a beginning.
Well, this reminds me in a way of political races where somebody introduces himself to the constituents in a particular way, and once he gets in office, he can do whatever he wants to do.
You know, in fact, the political analogy is perfect. You know, in a way, there's a contract established between the composer and the audience from the very first note. In Beethoven's case, the sharpness or abruptness of the beginning was in order to take the audience on a journey that they were not prepared to take. Today, the abruptness of the beginnings are in order to induce you to enter my world, to actually call attention, to say, come on in. But they're not as violently unsettling in the end as they were in Beethoven's case. In Beethoven's world, the world was settled, and his violating of that settled world brought you on a particular kind of journey. Now they're more a call for attention. Listen to this incredibly catchy beginning of John Adams' Lollapalooza, and in fact, even the title draws you in before you get to the first note.
I'm tapping my feet and my body is moving just in the first 2 seconds
yeah,
of the piece.
You can't resist it. You cannot resist it. And again, you know, once you make that first impression, they're with you. Because, you know, like a job interview or anywhere else, once you're sort of brought in and you're willing to participate, you can take them almost anywhere. You've got them in the palm of your hand.
So is writing every musical note a political act of some sort between the composer and the audience?
Well, I do think that behind every piece of music, in a way, particularly unconsciously, is a kind of worldview, a basic idea about what kind of journey you want to take the audience on, about what kind of experience you want from life. For example, if you have a drum track and it repeats over and over again and it starts and 3 minutes later it's doing the same thing, you're saying, I want to take you on a safe escapist journey. The world is what you thought it was. It's predictable, it's understandable, and it's safe. But when you take a Beethoven-like journey in which the world that you thought you had at the beginning is gradually shattered and then reassembled, you are literally experiencing a completely different kind of journey. And in a way, that's a politically unsettling, non-conservative journey versus the safe escapist journey. When you give an audience what they expect, it reconfirms their belief in the world around them. When you take them on a Beethoven journey, the world is a surprise around every corner, and it's in your hands which kind of journey you want to take. Mm.
You've got me thinking here. I'm going to be listening to music differently for a little while now after having this conversation with you. Rob Capello, thank you very much.
My pleasure, and don't miss the opening bars.
Here's another piece by John Adams with a catchy beginning and a catchy title, too. Short Ride in a Fast Machine.